morning, good afternoon, good evening. Welcome to another episode of Voices for Excellence. I am your host, Dr. Michael Connor, CEO and founder of the Agile Evolutionary Group and proud host of VFE. And today's guest, right, during Black Excellence, our Black Excellence series during Black History Month, this is the only time you're going to hear me compliment this brother. I love him to death. I love him like a brother, man. I tell you, I can't even get it out. That's how much I love Paul. When I first moved up to Rochester, I remember that everybody was saying, you got to meet Dr. Paul Miller. You got to talk to Dr. Paul Miller. And finally, when we got connected, about 8-9 months later, here we are. We're causing some good trouble across the country. And I'm going to tell the small story, and I'm going to have Doc laughing. So I went over to Doc's house on Thanksgiving. And when I went over to Doc's house on Thanksgiving, I brought my son. We wind up playing Madden. And, you know, Paul had a nice little lead over my son. And Paul had to go upstairs and, you know, handle family and everything. So he gave the controller to me. Now, I put us behind. I'm going to admit that, Doc. I put us
behind. Good. Thank you for your honesty.
Now, Doc, he comes back. He gets us back up.
That detail is important for those who are listening and might not be watching, but are listening. The word significantly is, you know, you're the human dictionary. So would you like to define what significantly means for people?
So Paul got us back in. So we're up 6. You can see I'm crying about this because I still laugh about this. So we're up 6 with about 10 seconds to go. Paul kicks it off to my son. This is fourth quarter. Now, I know Paul wasn't letting him do this because we want to come out with the W.
Not at all.
My son runs back like a 96-yard kickoff return for the touchdown. Game over, right? I look at
Paul. What was your son, 10?
I look up like, I'm like, yo, what are you doing? Yeah. But anyways, man, just like, again, Dr. Miller is such a huge voice in the education ecosystem nationally. Around within the Charter Network. He's currently the CAO for Exceptional, and he has just as many books out as Michael Jordan has rings. He wrote 6 books, right? Jordan can only do this. Dr. Miller can do this. Like I said, we talk, I would say probably either every day or every other day with some of the endeavors that we're doing together. Again, just a man absolutely admire. I love, there's only one thing I don't like about him, and you can see his background, but that's the denied love that we have. So without further ado, in this Black Excellence series, celebrating Black History Month, it is no other person that I would rather have on this episode or on this podcast. Like I said, just means so much to me, to my dear heart. Dr. Paul Miller, welcome to VFE and the Black Excellence Series. Bro, what's going on, man?
Thank you, man. I'm happy to be here. You know, I can't wait to get a rematch with your son. You know, what is he, 10? I let a 10-year-old come back and beat me with 4 seconds left. Like, that doesn't sit well with me. I'm super competitive. And then he's got the nerve to say, all right, Dad, it's time to go. He didn't say run it back. He didn't say anything. This dude said it's time to go. Like, it was past his bedtime and he was sleepy. So, like, yeah, I have some issues with him telling this personal. And so we got to rectify that situation.
Oh, man, Doc, you got me crying over here, man. That's the first on VFE. You got me crying, laughing, but it is so true, though. He was like, he said, Pops, you ready? And I'm like, you don't want to play me? He's like, nah. He went 1-0. He went like this. I won. He dropped the joystick, was like, I'm out. Let's go. I need my ride home. So just like driving this daisy, brought him back to the house. But Doc, thank you for coming on VFE. In all seriousness, I've been wanting to get you on the podcast for a long time. I purposely waited for the Black Excellence series because we're just highlighting Black excellence across the education ecosystem. And like I said, man, you're one of the educators that are really, really challenging the status quo, really changing the status quo. So I want my audience to be able to understand and unpack your intellectual property, but moreover, the vitality that you have for transformation. So, Paul, like I said, it's an absolute honor, your brother. But, you know, education stakeholders, whether it be public or whether it be charter, you know, whether they're reading your best-selling books, engaging with you as a CAO for Exceptional, leading professional learning across 27 different charter networks, even across the country. For those of you who do not know Dr. Paul Miller from Rochester, New York, what song describes your leadership signature within the ecosystem?
You know, song, you know, that's a good question. I always have to go with my theme song, which would be Juicy by Notorious B.I.G. You know, and that's always going to be, you know, if you don't know, now you know, you know, because it's always going to be about the struggle and then making it from the struggle to trying to live more of a lavish life. So that's always my theme song that always runs a loop on my head, in my head, and pushes and motivates me. So the same thing. And I think the two should intersect between leadership, personal and the professional should intersect, because my personal values need to guide my leadership values. And so I try to bring the authenticity and the struggle to leadership as well as just, you know, my personal endeavors.
Yeah, Dr. Miller, you know, I love that song, right? Authenticity. And we know that, you know, the Notorious B.I.G., Biggie, was just him and Tupac. I mean, they were genius. They were both geniuses with how they were used their words. I remember from that song, Juicy, birthdays was the worst days. Now we sip champagne.
Birthday.
Come on, man. I mean, yeah, Biggie in that track was just amazing. But you're right. When you think about the connectivity between the work that you're doing now, and then we're going to go in depth with the background, the trajectory to how you got to being this best-selling author six times, where you've written books that have just have influence and impact within the educational ecosystem. That alignment, that parallelization of authenticity, you know, exudes within every single thread of your work, Dr. Miller. See, you might be a Biggie guy. Here's the difference. I'm a Pac guy. So, you know, I like Tupac, you know, Biggie. I just wish that they would have been able to came together towards the end of that. But absolutely great song and selection.
I appreciate Pac, you know. Me Against the World is one of my favorite albums, you know, there was quite a few. I appreciate Machiavelli. I appreciate almost all of his work as well. It's just not, you know, it just doesn't do it for me the way that Biggie does. But I do appreciate it.
Yeah. You know what? It's funny you bring that up, Dr. Miller, because if I had somebody asked me, you know, what is my song that describes my leadership signature? There's two of them. One is Me Against the World, Tupac. Okay, so good call with that, Doc. You know me really well. And the second, you wouldn't have think of it, James Brown, Super Bad. So those are my two songs with that. But Doc, I want to first, and you heard me say this before, and I want to congratulate you again for becoming the CAO at Exceptional, which provides oversight for my audience out there. Exceptional provides oversight to 27 different charter schools and networks in the Monroe County, as well as Western New York. But what I want you to do, Dr. Miller, is to unpack your responsibilities as the Chief Academic Officer for Exceptional. And now that you're there, what is the vision to improve the overall quality of leadership, instructional effectiveness within the schools that you serve? And how will that direct work look like in context?
Right. So Exceptional started some time ago, but when Exceptional was started, and it was started by some folks who weren't educators, and they just really wanted to give back, and they really wanted to help provide support for the charter sector. And the reason being is not because they have anything against districts. So many times people refer to the district schools and they say public schools, but charter schools are public schools as well. Like in New York State, to have a uh, to have a private charter school is illegal at this point in time. So there's only public charter schools in New York State. And so, but people have a need to help charters because of the funding gaps. So there's a huge funding gap here. Specifically, Rochester sees it worse than a lot of the other cities in New York State. So Rochester receives about 55 cents on the dollar comparatively to some other places that get quite a bit more. Like New York City, they get around 19,000 per child. Albany gets almost 17 per child, but Buffalo, Rochester, and Syracuse get a lot less. And there's a complicated formulas that we could talk about. But my point being is the reason why these folks came to fruition was that because of the gaps, we got to do something to support, because there's nearly 10,000 kids who are in charter schools, and they composed of about 98% Black and Brown kids in about 90% poverty. And almost all of the schools are within the circumference of impoverished neighborhoods. There's maybe three or four that are in some of the surrounding areas here. And so they came together and they were like, what are they going to do? They ended up devising something called the Common App. So there's a common application that is for all the 27 schools, which will be 29 in the fall, because two new schools are coming. One is Green Tech Rochester, one that I'm part of that founding team. And then there's Brick is also coming. So there's 29 schools as of the fall. But with that being said, they wanted to, how do they support them? And there was no common application. So parents, it wasn't complicated. So if parents went to a district school, they could go one place and apply versus applying for multiple schools. So they solved that problem. And for a long period of time, that's what Exceptional was. The majority of what they did is they created Good Schools Rock, which is where the Common App is housed. Also, Exceptional did some things where they would contract support services out to schools and districts, to the charter schools. I didn't mean to say districts, but charter schools. And they would help support the schools by paying for some of the services. But what they realized was there was a hole in the need, because even though they were doing a lot of good, there would be people within the schools that challenged Exceptional because they didn't have a real educator on their team. They were all business community, great people who were doing some amazing things, but they wanted to bring some authenticity with education. So I was at Charter Champions, and we realized that we were going to have some financial issues moving forward, that we weren't going to get the funding that we needed. But myself and the CEO of Exceptional, Reverend Stephen Johnson, we decided that if we could come together, that we could get so much more done. And so if I could bring over the services that we were doing over at Charter Champions, and I could help support from an academic standpoint, what they were doing at Exceptional, and Exceptional was in a good spot, or is in a good spot, to continue to raise some money. And they move well and are well respected within the business community and the district, and just take a really good stance on things. So I moved over. And almost like a merger of sorts, I brought all the services from Charter Champions. So now that's going to be offered, or is being offered, through Exceptional, where we are now providing a pipeline for the schools as well. So one of our big pieces are putting more educators, specifically educators of color, back into the schools. So in the last 3.5 years, we've put over 3,000 applicants in front of schools. We've done new teacher institutes and workshops and trainings. We've done some other things to try to provide community support and community engagement. And so, like, even just last week for Christmas, Exceptional, due to some connections, we were able to partner with Rock Royal, and we gave out over 400 toys back to the community. And again, we reached out to charter schools, but we reached out to all community members, and we had a line around the corner for people coming to get toys. And it was about just filling gaps for the community and doing things in need. It wasn't specifically a charter school thing. But we're also going to be hyper-focused on improving the literacy rates in Rochester. So we have some goals to try to make sure that all of the schools are performing with higher rates of proficiency Whereas, you know, Rochester, for those who are listening who aren't aware, Rochester has some of the lowest proficiency rates in the country. Is Rochester like the third poorest city in the country, often highest murder rates per capita in New York State. The school district last year was 646 out of 646. I believe a year ago, the proficiency rate was like, or maybe 2 years ago, it was like 2% in math and 8% in ELA. And so right now, I think it's hovering around 18 and 20, which there's been some improvements and some gains. And the charter schools usually typically on average outperform the districts here by about 3 to 4%. So 3 to 4 times outperforming. So when it was, I think last year, the proficiency was 12%. Most of the charter school was somewhere between 36 to 48% proficiency. Still not good enough. Like, it's hovering under state average for the charter schools as well. So we got to do what we can to help support that and push the charter schools to do better as well and get their proficiency rates up. And Exceptional is really in the fight to try to support that.
Yeah. Dr. Miller, to my audience, I remembered over the summer, Dr. Miller had invited me to one of his professional learning sessions that he had with classroom practitioners ranging from the 27 schools, now the two new networks, Green Tech. Absolutely love that. Shout out to the founding principal of that, Dr. Christine Richards, and then also Brick coming to Rochester. But the way Dr. Miller presents is so captivating and compelling. I also saw him speak a well-attended session. Roughly, it was over 100 people. That was at his session at the 53rd annual NAPSE conference that was held in Chicago. And I could just only infer, Paul, now that you're with Exceptional, that you are going to really create this level of coherence in the context of instructional quality and pedagogical effectiveness, and the intentionality that you have, that I saw you in two different sessions, one with teachers, one with broad leaders, just absolutely exceptional the way that you deliver to PD. I just cannot wait to see your broader impact within the Rochester community and much more in a broader sense now in this new concentrated focus role as the CAO overseeing 29 charter schools. But Dr. Miller, many have thought about writing a book. I only wrote one, brother. I'm working on the second.
Hey, that's amazing still. Yeah.
I'm working on the second, but man, you got just as many books out as Michael Jordan got championships. 6, right? And we're going to talk about 2 here in depth, but can you just overall, I know that you have 6 books out, but can you provide a first to third floor elevator introduction overview of your books and what pushed you to publish these texts at a national level? And congratulations, because over 50% of them, from what I understand, are bestsellers. So we'd love to hear your description of your books.
So, you know, it was interesting because some years ago I had sat down to have a conversation. I met this brother that, again, I feel like God has aligned my life with good people and has put me in place with people when I need folks, right? And so whether it's been you or whether it's been other people that there's been alignment. So there's this brother that I met, and he was in, he did trainings for the government. And so we were sitting down, and I look at him like a definitely as a mentor, and he has just poured into me whenever we have the opportunity to get together. And so, and his name is Jeff. And so when Jeff poured into me, he said something like, and our relationship at this time was rather new as friendship, but he was just very open and willing to share. And he said, you know, if you want to take your career trajectory to a heightened state or be able to speak and be next level, he said, you need product. He said, you get great results. Like, I led schools that were 97% Black and brown young men in 90% poverty, but I averaged a 95% graduation rate, 100% acceptance of college, $25 million in scholarship money every year for, years and years, for 11 years when I was there as the CEO. So I've been able to build systems that work, but he said, unless you got some products, it's not going to mean anything. And so he pushed me and he kind of lit a fire. And so I went back and I was able to do a turnaround of, You know, I had one, my first book, which was my research, and I turned it into a book. And then while I was doing that, I also started writing the second book and trying to figure out the process. And I wouldn't say that I'm not Shakespeare, right? So you know, you it's a learning process. And I will say, I believe that it's gotten better, and gotten to a point where I believe I'm producing work that I believe all of it was very useful and has been helpful for people, but also now I'm producing work that people actually want to read, and that I believe if they read it will help motivate, inspire, and change their lives and help transform, you know. And most of my books are really finding beauty in the struggle and how do we change our mindsets so that we can be the people that we want to be, but also we can now in turn utilize our newfound mindsets to help others become the people they want to be. And so, you know, it's about transformation, it's about change, it's about unpacking your baggage and so that you can be better for you know, yourself, for kids, for your spouse, for other adults, and you can be the people that you're meant to be, so you can move from your gutter to your greatness. And you know, and that's really what it's all about for me, is changing mindsets. And that's the overall theme that I would say goes across most, if not all, of the books.
Dr. Miller, I appreciate your books, and we're going to be speaking about two of them. And one of them is kind of like a catchphrase where I assess myself, is this the good me or is this the hood me? But we're going to get into
right,
that.
Right.
When we talk about changing mindsets, right? And you use some key words, I would even call them meta themes, right? Within all your books, is motivational, inspiring, and transforming, right? But overall, changing the mindsets. I want to keep that phrase there, right? Changing mindsets for transformation, motivation, and being inspirational, because your book, right? And you highlighted just a moment ago, From the Gutter to Greatness, right? To me and to my audience, I read that. That was one of the first books you gave me, Paul. I dissected it, but you know me and my analytical brain, right? I started moving towards this scientific, transformative nodes, processes that can be underscored within any type of change management, continuous improvement methodology or mechanism for leaders. I viewed it, Dr. Miller, you're going to laugh when I said this, right? I view this as a profound story where crowdsourcing design can be applicable for systems level transformation. Now, I want to provide another context to it. If I was this book, From Gutter to Greatness, right? I would use it in a doctoral class using the case study method to unpack specific themes around targeting strategies to change educational systems, to change models, right? Because at the core is about students. Now, Doc, high level again, From Gutter to Greatness, right? What was in that text? And I want you to define greatness for my VFE audience. How do we design schools that reach students to ensure there's a personal pathway of greatness and where it's realized for them?
Got you. So I think starting with defining what gutter means. And so the G stands for grieving your past. So use and develop the ability to understand, especially as for all people, but when I'm speaking to men of color, we often don't, it's not safe for us to dig into our emotions, our feelings. You know, we don't walk up to each other and say, hey, Dr. Connor, I think I need therapy, man, you know, because I need help with this. It's not one of the first things until you feel trust. And even when you feel trust, you know, within our culture, often being vulnerable like that is not always seen as a positive, seen as a weakness. And so be willing to grieve your past, and it's okay. You know, anytime there's a loss, you need to go through your grieving process, the grieving time. And, you know, you go through the different stages of grief. And then, you know what, as you're grieving, learn, and the you means understand your wound. So, you know, what is the wound? What really hurt you? What really affected you? What is it that's clogging your gutter? So if you think about your gutter, what is clogging it is, if there's debris in a gutter, it's going to create a backup. It's going to create damage to your outside of your roof, your inside of your house, and the exterior of your house, right? But once you remove that and you figure out what it is, the water will run freely. So that's understand what the wounds are. And then once you understand it, you got to tell the truth about it. You know, so we don't often talk about it. We don't tell the truth about it. We hide it. We're ashamed of it. We need to speak it and tell the truth about it, because you know what? That really happened to us. So if you were abused as a child, you know what? That really happened to you. You know, for me, there was things that happened to me. So like when I say that, meaning there was, I went through domestic violence. I went through hard times and hardships that affected the way that I went through being left alone and feeling unloved and unwanted. And it's turned into and manifested itself into how I am as a person, how I am as a leader, how I am as a partner. And so I've had to, I had to understand it. And then I've had to tell the truth about it. And then what it also has been is the other T is I have to turn my pain into my purpose. And so I have to, you know what? I have to take all this pain that I have, but I have to think about what's my why, what am I deeply connected to, and how do I turn my pain into my purpose so that I can be purposeful and intentional, and I can then equip myself with the tools that I need. So equipping myself with the tools that I need, because you know what, you're the master of your ship and the captain of your soul. So I have to equip myself. So yeah, I had to write this book to help start the healing process, still going through the healing process. I had to get therapy. I had to talk to people. I had to journal. I had to find the outlets that I needed to equip myself with the tools, instead of sitting in that old mindset of how it used to be and continuing that same mind frame as I go forward. And then as I'm healing, I have to stand in it and rise. That R is rising. So, and rise to be the king and queens that you all are, and rise and not go back to what was there. Because once you've risen, move forward into the light that is shining in front of you. And so that's what the gutter is all about. And so when you apply that also to schools and making best practices, I think what it comes down to, Dr. Connor, is that as individuals and people and as leaders, for all my leaders out there, if you're not the best version of yourself, you're not leading properly. You're not modeling the way. You're not doing the five tenets of leadership that Kuzis and Pazos say create the best organizations, which would be modeling the way, or creating a shared vision, enabling others to, challenging the process, enabling others to act, and then encouraging the heart, right? But the first starts with modeling the way. And so if you're not working on your own healing, I guarantee you're not being authentic, and your authentic self isn't showing up, and your values aren't aligning to the school's values, and your values not aligning to the school's values are making it so the school isn't driven from a mission aligned place that is going to create people working together through collective efficacy, right? And because we know that CTE, collective teacher advocacy, based on Jan Hattie's research, shows that that's what moves the needle the most, is creating schools that have healthy people and happy people that believe in the mission and vision, that are led through values because they have trust within each other. And so those are the things that, if a school is not doing that, which when I talk to most leaders don't care about any of that. They skip by it and they just want to go to the work. And what happens is when they skip by it and they just go to the work, they're missing out on really developing people, developing places. Yeah, we need to develop the systems, and I could give you a system for almost everything, right? But if you're not going to develop the people, if you're not going to create the environment that's needed, you're going to miss out. And it starts with you doing the work on yourself. you know, even in my other book, We Need to Do Better, Changing the Mindset of Children Through Family, Community, and Education. And that part two is the teacher's guide. That's all about like taking specifically all people, but teachers through six different stages to end up working on themselves so they can be better for their kids. But they also can do these lessons with the kids. So they work on and it's about building empathy, because a lot of it is our teachers don't always understand our kids because they often come from different communities. And so it's about understanding what the struggles of life look like, and then what's your identity, and then how did the past affect the present, and what did that look like for the kids that you service, and then how do you overcome learned helplessness, how do you support your families and communities, and then six, last but not least, is developing a championship mindset with it all. And so if you go back there, I hope you see a common theme, even though it's said a little bit differently and is given differently. It's still a common theme of changing mindsets, because if we can be better for ourselves, we're going to be better for the kids we service.
Dr. Miller, just an absolute exceptional response, right? To my audience, right? And the way Dr. Miller unpacks gutter, it really adheres to mnemonic device, the alignment. When Dr. Miller was unpacking this, grieving your past, understanding, telling the truth, turning pain into purpose, equipping yourself with the tools you need, and rising. Now, Dr. Miller, when you were providing your answer, I started to unpack it in a variety of different ways. I kept on referencing back to Martin Haberman's work, and he wrote an abstract. It was called Pedagogy of the Poverty, right? And everything you described is the antithesis to counter pedagogy of poverty. Specifically, you talked about empathy and moving away from a deficit mindset to this asset-based mindset, where it's in essence a strengths-based model. Dr. Miller, this is a sub-question, because again, when we talk about leaders, right, having the necessary capacity to look at it from this kind of like this vulnerable state, where it's okay to exhibit that level of vulnerability, to model the mnemonic device of gutter, as I like to say, grieving your past, understanding, telling the truth, turning pain into purpose, equipping yourself with the tools that you need, and rising. From a capacity standpoint, you reference back to collective teacher efficacy, number one on Hattie's work, as you underscored in your statement. How do we collectively reach this level of efficacy when we have to define it from this gutter lens?
I think you reach it by not shying away from it, by not running from it, because running from it won't save you, right? And so as people and as individuals, a lot of times what happens is there's Dr. Michael Connor, and then there's Mikey, right? Or Mike, right?
I love the example. Yeah.
And so Dr. Connor has risen to all kinds of success through his career, like in some of the success that I'm aware of. I know that you have been able to be the top 100 administrators in the country. You have successful tech platforms that are used all over the world. You've been a successful superintendent that's ran district where you've gotten all kinds of results, you know? And so what people see, and the people that you service, and the people that you are a leader amongst, they see Dr. Michael Connor, and they see this man who's achieved all of these things, right? But the truth of it is a lot of times, as I speak for as a man, right? And you can add your own testimony, but we hide the personal things that we've been through. You hide those wounds. You've hid the time that you got punched in the eye somewhere, and I'm not saying that happened, right? I don't know if it did or didn't, but or you, and metaphorically, right? or you've hid something that has happened.
Well, Dr. Miller, we got punched in the eye by my son on Thanksgiving.
Absolutely. We hide that, right? And so, no, I'm going to tell the truth about it, right? He got me. And it was nothing I couldn't do about it, but it did scar me deeply. But at the end of the day, you know, we don't share those things. We don't talk about those things. And most of the time, you don't go into work talking about those things. And I'll give you an example that that I like to give for something that to bring it home. So I was at work and performing, and I was performing, you know, like my schools were the schools getting results. We're doing dope, amazing things. But I still don't think I was doing my best or as good as I could do. And a lot of times in your head, you're thinking that you're better than you are, right? And so I have to, I think people in education need to humble themselves because A, if you're not getting results, you're not that good. So like, that's one thing, right? And I'm gonna tell you the way it is. And then second thing is, let me back up to that first thing, because because this bothers me, man. I don't go back to my story, but if people are not getting results, it drives me nuts when people say, oh, there was such an amazing doctor, such and such, and such an amazing, amazing administrator, because he was a nice guy. But if the kids aren't getting results, if they're not performing, if they're not doing what they're supposed to do in educating, and he wasn't that good of an educator, might be an amazing human being, but he's not that good of an educator. And he should have probably stopped and asked for help. He should have reached out. But education and you wouldn't think this, but education is a platform of many egos. And people within education often don't want to admit that they need help or support. And usually it becomes to their own personal trauma because they're insecure and they don't want to give away that I don't know, or I need help and I need somebody to help me. So I get back to all of those things to say, you know, I was doing a pretty good job. I was getting results, but I probably wasn't getting as good of results that numerically we were. But internally, how do my people feel? Was I doing the best job that I could do? Was I leading them in all the ways that I could? Because I was missing something that was important. And so we did this exercise. It was like, you know, we have the opening days and we often focus on mission, vision, values, and I'll push those things. And so we did this values exercise. And one of the things they said on the values exercise, what do you value the least? And so I did the exercise. And then I went home. At the time I was married, my ex-wife now. And so I went home to her and I said, hun, let's try this exercise. We did it at work and it was great. And I would love to hear your value. And I think I'm about to get some cool points and I'm trying to talk to her and all this other stuff. And so we do the exercise and the answer that I gave. So I had my list of things that I don't value. And when she saw that list, she stopped talking to me for about 2 weeks. And so and the ladies who are listening to this are going to be mad at me too, but I don't feel like this anymore. I was wrong and I've worked hard to improve. Let me start with that. So my answer was, I really don't value communication. And so I was feeling like that. And I think I put it on my work answer too, that I don't value communication. So how could I not value communication, but consider myself to be a astute leader or be this great leader? Even if I'm pretending like I want to hear you, I was at a point where I don't really give a care that, I'll act like I want to listen to it, but am I sincerely, genuinely wanting to communicate? And the answer probably would have been no. I think I was covering it up good. But, and then I had to figure out why did I feel like that? And so she didn't talk to me for like 2 weeks because she said, that's your problem. You don't care about communicating. And if you don't care about communicating, how are we going to be married and all this other stuff? And what I realized was it was due to some of my wounds. And it wasn't that I don't like to communicate. I didn't want to communicate with her. And I didn't want to communicate with her. I think it was also affecting how I communicated at work because I was shut down to communication because she would often make me feel unloved, unwanted, and uncared about because of our relationship. And because of going back further, that's how I felt growing up. And I had to dive in and figure that out. And as I figured out that I felt like that growing up and she was making me feel like that, made it so I was afraid or didn't want to communicate with her. And so I had to start being conscious. And so consciously working on that and working on the healing that was needed behind that and figuring out where it was coming from, telling the truth about it. And then I had to equip myself with figuring out where it came from. And then so I could rise into a better future of leading people differently. And what I realized was is communication is the first and foremost. It's one of the biggest priorities on my list now, because without it, people aren't going to effectively work together. You know, they need to understand the why, they need to understand the how. But that is something that as a leader, I had to admit that I wasn't doing well and that I could get better. And if I wanted to get to the success that I wanted to see, I had to say, man, there's stuff I need to work on.
Yeah. Dr. Miller, you know, and why I love that, right, is not only do you continuously model the behaviors of vulnerability, I think too, especially now in what I'm calling AC 2035 ready, the AC stage of education, we have to be able to now be keenly aware of where we're at and then moving forward with this acceptance and then the strategies to be able to address some of that previous grief or the previous hurt. And that's very intentional, right? It's very intentional. And the reason why I said that the Gutter from Greatness can be used as a primary text in a doctoral class is how do we now teach that within our students, right? And that's where now and interjecting that or interfacing that into the instructional model where, yeah, you're getting your academic acceleration, your execution through standards, through innovation and everything, but how do we now teach students to be aware, have that level of awareness and acceptance, and then the necessary strategies to work internally, having that intentional introspect to be able to move forward. That I love that, Doc.
Now, you know something, Mike, that's why I was very purposeful, and thank you, first of all, but I was very purposeful in creating the 21-day challenge to go along with it, the workbook, which is moving from your gutter to greatness, which is it's actually 24 days of challenges because they say it takes 21 days to break a habit. So I created going back to kind of just dig into the book thing for a second is when I wrote the book, it was taking longer than I wanted to get it all edited and finalized and into stores and those things. But something put on my spirit that it's taking longer because there's more to do. And so what I did was I created the workbook, which is 24 days, call it the 21-day challenge. And it's 24 days of challenges to actually help people to break their cycles and start doing the work. So, and as an online course, there's all those pieces. And I'm not using this as a sales pitch to really... But what I am trying to say is this is something that people can actually do to work through some of the issues and help themselves. And it's simple. It's not rocket science. It's not, you know, it's not theoretical in nature. It's actually doing the work and taking and having the discipline to actually put yourself on this journey of this challenge so you can begin the transformation needed. And it's all for you. It's not for anybody else to see unless you want to share it. So yeah, those are things that were very intentional and purposeful, like you're saying, because I want people to actually do the work. And then I wanted them to show how. And then in the 21-day challenge, I did the work and I put my challenge in there so that people could see that I wasn't just talking about it. They could see I was actually being about it.
Yeah. Dr. Miller, to my audience, The Gutter from Greatness, again, that was one of the first books that Dr. Miller gifted me when I moved to Rochester. So it is a great, great, great book. Please support Dr. Miller with that. You'll find it very resonating. And of course, at the end, Dr. Miller, we always provide our contact information at the end. I'm sure that people would reach out to you. But another text, right, that I think that you wrote was a genius text the good me and the hood me. You know, I always, you know, and to my audience, Dr. Miller and I, we always joke around. I'm like, no, that's the good me, right? I was like, no, that's the hood me in there. But a genius text on how you wrote it, right? It explains the duality perspective of students coming from marginalized environments, right? And for my audience, the themes from the book, it meticulously challenges the perceived notions about the hood. And that's why I truly appreciate this text. The hood should not be viewed as a deficit. And I think that you were able to articulate that in this really profound and concise manner. But the hood in your text, it represents culture. It represents resilience. And it represents the community in this interconnected manner. So I want you to put this from a perspective of the AC stage of education, Dr. Miller, and that's after COVID-19. How do we shift educational and societal perspectives, mindsets, to honor the both good me and the hood me within our students in today's classrooms?
Yeah. And this was written for kids, in a voice that I hope that they can understand. And I think putting it into perspective is the things that our kids have seen and are seeing and see daily, that's going on around them. But again, if we could start working on healing and we could help our kids to start addressing the things that are going on with them, inside of them, the feelings that they're going through or dealing with earlier, what this book is about is trying to find the right voice, where we all have that voice and we all have that conscious, we all have the good and evil, right? We all have that, and that voice is inside of all of us. And there's times that we have listened and there's times that we don't listen. And usually they both come with consequences, whether it be good or bad consequences. But if we could get our kids to start self-actualizing enough, to start healing enough to hear those voices and not turn them off, regardless of the circumstances that they may be going through, their path is going to be so much easier and it's going to move so much quicker because they're going to avoid certain pitfalls. And that's what this is all about. But as educators, what is our obligation and our duty to helping our kids understand and find this voice that we know is inside of them, instead of just feeling like they're going to find or be a victim to their circumstances? Because how often do we see it? Again, it comes down to the mindset. Do we see as individuals and even with our kids that we service and that we are our parents to, that we're educators to, that we work with, do we see that people often get typecast as, because of their circumstances, into the villain or the victim, and that they're not going to make it, and the predictions that get made on their lives often can be looked upon as very negative, and often by our own teachers and our own educators and our own leaders in our buildings, because of where they're coming from. Oh, this kid, he watches mom shoot up heroin, or this kid, they don't have any food, or this kid, didn't turn in his homework, this kid. But if we can teach people and we can teach our kids to hear the right voice and to help and heal themselves and move in the right direction and find success regardless of those circumstances, I think we've done our jobs.
Absolutely. And Dr. Miller, you contextualize, I always like to say, this tension that we see in the education ecosystem, empathy versus sympathy, right? Our students don't need a sympathy-based model. They need an empathetic model to be able to accelerate their outcomes. To my VFE audience out there that are listening, the good me and hood me is a kid's book, but this is where you, and for my classroom practitioners out there, teachers that are out there, you can actually use this book, whether it be in a shared reading activity, mini lesson activity, read aloud activity. And if you want to know what the correlating standards are from an ELA perspective, Anchor Standard 1, Anchor Standard 2, Anchor Standard 4, vocabulary, Anchor Standard 5, text structure. But more importantly, you can get really deep in the context of Anchor Standard 6, which is point of view. Like I said, it's just a genius written text where there's so many explicit and implicit messages that can be unwrapped and taught in depth. And I see this reciprocity, Dr. Miller when I was reading The Good Me, Hood Me, and The Gutter from Greatness, where you have this connectivity from the leadership standpoint, adult standpoint, and then bringing it down to our babies, Generation Alpha, Generation Z as well. Like I said, very meticulously designed these two books, but the meta theme, or I should say the mega theme of this is around how do we now prepare ourselves and the mindsets to going back to those three key indicators you talked about earlier, motivation, inspiring students, and transforming students as well. But Doc, on a different note, I want to first like to congratulate you again. There's so many congratulations around Dr. Miller, right? Congratulations to Dr. Miller, because he is one of the founding members and he's a part of opening a new charter school in Rochester, New York called Green Tech Academy, K-5 school, all boys, that will be opening in August of 2026. The founding principal, CEO, which is Dr. Christine Richards. She has been doing a phenomenal job. Pastor Johnson, who is the founding board president for Green Tech. And then also Green Tech, Dr. Christine Richards, Dr. Paul Miller, as well as the team, they're utilizing and underscoring the Agile Diagnostic and AI platform to move Green Tech from year zero and all of the micro implementation steps from an operational instructional standpoint to year one. So we are very, very proud to be just a slither of being a part of the opening of a new school in Rochester, New York. But beyond the strategic partnership of using analytics and AI to move Green Tech from year zero to year one, focusing on an instructional standpoint and an operational standpoint and opening processes within Green Tech, beyond all of that, right? Because that's great. Dr. Miller, why Green Tech right now in this rapidly growing educational environment?
We approach education a little differently, and it's about building quality young people. It's about building quality staff. It's about building quality leaders. It's about building systems that work so that our kids can be successful. And it's one of those places that if somebody is going to work there, something that I would say to my staff previously, and that people remind me of this all the time, this will probably be one of the hardest places you ever worked, because there's always going to be one more thing. There's always going to be one more thing asked of you. It's never going to stop. And if you're not okay with that, and so many people say, yeah, I'm okay until they get in there, right? But if you're not okay with that, this really isn't the place for you, because we have to act like we are performing surgery, and the person on the other end, if we don't perform it correctly, they're going to die. And so we have to act like performing in the surgery is someone's life on the line. And so we are putting people's lives on the line, and our goal is to provide an education that helps to change and helps to make sure that they live a long, successful life because of the surgery that we just performed. And so, you know, it's going to help change that trajectory for the young men here in Rochester, New York. And then my goal is to take what we're doing here and transplant it into other communities as well, because, you know, and I feel like I almost feel like the Blues Brothers, man, like on a mission from God, where it's like, you know, if there's things get in the way, but it's not going to stop it from happening. Going to create change for other communities and make sure that communities have the ability to benefit from this type of education. And so, you know, we're going to, and which, you know, I've brought my brother here, Dr. Connor, in on this. And we have developed a team of some other educators as well, where we're now not just going from one school, but we're going to try to duplicate and replicate this in many places. So we already have on the agenda to submit application for Niagara Falls in North Carolina this spring, for Texas in the fall. That's three in 2026 that we're submitting for. You know, so we got our work cut out for us, and there's other opportunities that are popping up and other things we're doing that, you know, we want to make sure that it comes to fruition before we make these big announcements. But the goal is really, to me, is how do we change communities for kids that look like us and make sure that they have the opportunity to survive because they can read, write, and do math, and they can critically think versus the traditional way of just, not giving them everything they need.
Yeah. Yeah. And Dr. Miller, very, very intentional, right? And again, I look forward to not only just working with you, but just seeing your impact, right? And the broader ecosystem domestically and nationally, I should say. And you're absolutely right. Education is a civil right. And we need to ensure that we bring that level of vitality, intentionality, and rigor for students, like you said, within the analogy that you provided, which is like a student having surgery, or we need to really have that urgency as if where we're performing surgery, which I think we are, right? And to the degree we are, we're surgically preparing our students for a future that is unprecedented, that is novel, and that is uncertain. But one thing that is certain is that if we can provide the necessary skills and competencies to our students, even at the early onset, hence the design of Green Tech Academy K through 5, I think we're creating a strong pretext leading into the future. And again, thank you for your courageous work with this, Dr. Miller, because one thing that I admire and appreciate about you is that you're very candid with the truth. You're very candid, obsolete, what I like to say, this kind of like this, you bring the rigor to where the conversation needs to occur. And to some people, it feels uncomfortable. But I think that in order for us to really move forward, we have to prepare our educators or leaders to feel comfortably uncomfortable about the conversations that we had. You talked about the quality, the staff, systems, everything that worked together, but more importantly, how we can be able to elevate our kids strategically with the synergy that is needed. So, good brother, I don't know if I can ever do this to you, but this is the last question, and I'm going to try to hold you to three words. I don't know if I can hold you. Doc, nobody listens to me, right? Nobody listens to me when I say you only got three words. They go three and expand. So take it how it is. But Dr. Miller, what three words do you want our audience to leave with regarding the title of this book, We Need to Do Better in the AC Stage of Education?
All right. So let's see. Three words for We Need to Do Better. It's about you.
Oh, you're going to be a roof hour. Please break it.
Hey, you asked me to, it's about you. You asked me the three words.
Well, I'm asking you three and.
Well, you can't ask me one thing and then move the shoreline and then tell me to do something else. And then when I don't do it, you're going to say I didn't do it right the first time. I don't understand that, Dr. Connor. So you can't ask me one thing and then ask me to talk some more. Hey, man, because it's about you, man. The only way we can change education or change the system is if we start individually changing ourselves. Because we are the ones who are contributing to the system and creating the faults and defaults. It didn't get like this by itself. How did it get this way? How have we been failing kids for so many years and it be okay? Because people have allowed it to be because of a lot of adult BS, because of a lot of the idiosyncrasies, the bureaucracy, the politics. I'll wash your back if you wash mine, whether it's good for kids or not. It's really not. Those things are, I understand that quid pro quo happens and all that good stuff happens. But the truth of it is, man, it's about you. What are you going to do? And I don't mean you in general. I mean your audience. What are you going to do to change it? How are you going to change you? What are you not doing? What do you need to look at? How do you need to work harder? What needs to change so that you can get the results that you need to get, and so that we can do better? But first of all, you got to admit that you ain't doing right. You ain't doing what needs to do. You know, even if you are accomplished, is there more? Could there be more? what is it that you're missing that your ego is getting in the way of?
Yeah. Dr. Miller, it's about you. Listen, it has, you know, from somebody that absolutely just love you as a person, Paul Miller, and someone that just absolutely loves your work, Dr. Paul Miller, thank you for everything that you're doing. Like I said, I know your work intimately, what you're doing here in the Rochester community, what you've been doing in the Monroe County. In December around Christmas, Dr. Miller, as well as, you know, Dr. Johnson, who's the founding board president for Green Tech, they were distributing over 1,000 toys, over 1,500 toys to the community. Just the work that he does, it's just not only one that needs to be emulated across the country, but two, it's really coming in a place of endearment. So, Dr. Miller, thank you for everything that you're doing. Thank you for coming on VFV during the Black History Month, during our Black Excellence series. If anybody wants to contact you regarding whether it be the Gutter to Greatness, whether it be the Good Me, Hood Me, whether it be We Need to Do Better, or any of your texts, or just the work that you are underscoring as a chief academic officer, how would they be able to get in contact with you?
The easiest way to check me out is probably going to drpmiller.com, drpmiller.com. All my information's there. You can check it all out. You can see information about the Educated Black Man Tour. You can see from the Good Me to Hood Me.com. You can see from the Gutter to Greatness books. Like, all this different stuff is there. But drpmiller.com, drpmiller.com is probably the easiest way to get a hold of me. And you can message me, and I do a pretty good job at responding.
Yeah, Dr. Miller, I tell you, you remind me so much of somebody back home that I absolutely love and admire and adore, Dr. Stephen Peary. He has opened up the Capital Prep schools that we're seeing across
the country. I'm the other light-skinned guy doing the work, and much, much more handsome, too, by the way. I know Dr. Peary as well, but I'm the other guy. You know, he's, you know, that brother wears a bow tie everywhere. I'm too cool for that. But I admire his work too. Good brother. You know, I respect it. But I'm the other light skinned guy doing the work, man. I'm the more handsome one.
I tell you something about you light skinned brothers that always take something to my heart.
What's up, Dr. Peary, man? It's good, dude.
Love Dr. Peary, but I'm getting back to you, man. Like I said, you remind me so much of him. Your work just complements each other. I love both of you brothers. You know, I love Dr. Peary when I was in Connecticut. You know, that was my light-skinned brother right back then.
You always need to keep one around, man. We make you look good.
And I got my light-skinned brother up here in Rochester, New York. Dr. Miller, I love you so much, brother. Thank you for coming
on. My brother. Thank you for having me.
Absolutely. And on that note, onward and upward, everybody. Have a great evening.